So Saturday was a horrible day if you live in the Middle East. Israel was directly attacked by Iran, and this is something American officials have feared for a very long time. Iran has multiple terrorist proxies. So when you think of a proxy, think of the Cold War. When the United States fought in Vietnam, we had a draft. We fought directly in Vietnam. But when we fought in South Korea, we didn't actually send as many troops to South Korea as you might imagine. We sent troops, but not very many. And obviously we won that war, yada yada yada. But a proxy is a nation that is kind of like a puppet. A nation that will do exactly what you want or what you want them to do. So for America, one of our proxies is something like Puerto Rico. Now Puerto Rico is also a territory, so it's not technically an official proxy. But think of it that way. So Iran's proxies are people like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis in Yemen, some of the Syrians, some Iraqians. Those are Iranian proxies. And they're Iranian proxies because they will do anything Iran wants them to do. So if that's shooting missiles into Israel or going in and slaughtering 1,200 innocent Israeli civilians, they only do that because Iran wants them to do that. They share a similar goal to Iran, and the goal for Iran is to eliminate Israel and defeat the United States. That's Iran's end game. That is their goal. And we saw that play out on Saturday. So Saturday, Iran sent in over 100 cruise missiles and over 100 additional suicide drones. A suicide drone is basically a cruise missile, except it's slower and it can maneuver more. It can change its target quicker. It's a drone that'll just crash into something. That's its goal. So they sent in over 100 missiles and over 100 suicide drones, and a lot of their missiles were actually ballistic missiles. So keep that in mind because that's really important for later when we talk about Israel's retaliation and their defense. Only one missile hit. It was a ballistic missile that hit Israel. It hit an airbase, and the only person who died was a 7-year-old Israeli girl. I believe, I don't remember, I don't know if she died in the blast of the missile that hit the airbase or if she died from debris falling when Israel intercepted other missiles. I'm not sure how exactly she died, but she is the only casualty reported so far. So if you're a religious person or you're praying man or woman, pray to God for thanks for the defense of Israel, God's people, and pray that they can retaliate against Iran in an effective way. This isn't something to take lightly. Iran has been wanting to attack Israel directly for ages. The only thing that's been stopping them is that we, the United States of America, defend Israel. And we saw that also play out. So Saturday, two things happened. First, Iran attacked Israel as well as Hezbollah. So Iran and Hezbollah both sent in missiles into Israel. Israel defended themselves. They intercepted, shot down almost every single missile and drone that came at them. The United States, believe it or not, the United States and British Air Forces shot down almost all of the drones and missiles before they even got to Israeli airspace. Israel just did the rest when they got to Israeli airspace with their Iron Dome and their fighter jets in the air and stuff like that. So Israel did really well overall, and I don't want to say they were victorious because there's no such thing as victory in war. Victory in war is quashing your enemy and everyone dies. So in reality, there is no victory. But if you want to look at it from a strategy, I can't say words today. If you want to look at it in terms of like strategy, I guess you could say it's victory, but not really. So you would expect after this attack, the United States would be like, okay, Israel, you can go back and you can retaliate against Iran. But that's not what we're doing. I'm an American and I'm ashamed of my leaders right now because they're doing nothing. Joe Biden literally said, and I'm going to find the report where this is in, but he literally said, do not retaliate. Do not retaliate. That is not words to take lightly. Israel needs to ignore what we are saying. The entire reason why Iran thought they could attack Israel was not because Israel attacked their embassy. That has nothing to do with it. The entire reason Iran thought they could attack Israel was because American politicians and American leaders and military officials are not backing Israel. Yes, I'm proud of them. I'm very happy with my nation right now. We defended Israel from missiles and drones. We used SM-3 missiles to intercept ballistic missiles when they were in space. That is impressive. That was the first time an SM-3 anti-missile. This is going to be really confusing for you people who aren't very interested in military affairs or military weapons or technology. The SM-3 missile is an anti-missile missile. So its entire job is to shoot down other missiles, preferably ballistic ones. Now the SM-6 is the newest missile, and its job is to shoot down ballistics and hypersonics. We use the SM-3 because Iran doesn't have hypersonics, they have ballistics. So we fired SM-3s at the ballistic missiles using two destroyers in the Red Sea, and it was extremely effective. We shot down just about every single thing before it hit Israeli airspace. We shot them down with our own fighter jets. We shot them down with our own missiles, our destroyers. The only things that entered Israeli airspace were pretty easy to swat down anyway. And Israel swatted those down with Arrow 3's missiles and with the Iron Dome, except for one snuck through and one person died, unfortunately. I'm very happy that the United States and Britain defended Israel like that. But we can't just turn our backs immediately. We defended them from an immediate, imminent attack of multiple missiles, and we're just going to expect them not to retaliate? Let me give some insight into why Iran did this. So, a few weeks ago, Israel attacked the Iranian embassy in Syria. And at this embassy, there were a couple IRGC commanders. So if you don't know who the IRGC are, they're the Islamic Guard Revolutionary Guard. They're basically a terrorist group that is directly connected to Iran. So they're not even a proxy. They literally are part of Iran. And they are a terrorist group. They help coordinate terrorist attacks with Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis. They coordinate terror attacks with themselves. They will go into military bases. They will lay bombs. They will attack people. They will kill civilians. Their entire goal is terror. That's their entire goal. So they are labeled as a terrorist group. They are, in fact, a military organization. Now, it is illegal to attack an embassy. Israel attacked an Iranian embassy. What's not illegal is to attack anything that is being used as military operations. Iran's embassy in Syria had IRGC commanders, which are labeled as military operatives. There were multiple IRGC commanders. I believe there were 6 or 7 of them there. Now, you don't have 6 or 7 IRGC commanders for a diplomatic mission. That's not how this works. They were there for military reasons, which means that embassy was being used as a base of military operations. Which means, according to international law, it is legal for Israel to attack that embassy. And that is exactly what Israel did. Israel attacked that embassy. Now, there is another clause in there that says, if you are attacked, if a property of your nation or your nation directly is attacked, you can retaliate in kind. You can retaliate in kind, according to international law. Iran did not retaliate in kind. So I did expect Iran to retaliate. I did not expect them to send hundreds of missiles and drones. And I definitely didn't expect the United States to defend Israel. So I'm glad we did defend Israel. I give credit where credit's due. I give credit to Joe Biden and our military leaders for defending Israel. I do not give credit for them turning their backs immediately afterwards. So the in-kind part is the one part we have to focus on right now. In-kind. Iran did not retaliate in-kind. Israel destroyed an embassy and killed 7 non-civilians. Non-civilians, they were IRGC commanders, they killed operatives of war. When Iran and Hezbollah fired those missiles into Israel, they didn't only aim for military bases. The main targets were air bases that held F-35s. None of those hit. There was only one missile that hit a base, and it did minimal damage and minimal injuries in the end, so it really didn't do much. But they were also aiming at civilian centers into cities where civilians live, aiming at businesses, aiming at skyscrapers. That is not responding in kind. What Iran did is not good. What Iran did is not moral. It's not an in-kind response. What they are doing, how they responded, No, that does not go well with international law. That is illegal international. Now, of course, no one really cares about international law because it's the UN, and let's be completely honest, when was the last time even the United States obeyed UN law? Let me put this into reference real quick. The last time the UN told the US that we cannot do something was when we had tariffs and what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like a stimulus, but not really. We encouraged businesses through incentives to come to the United States. They were semiconductor businesses, so computer businesses, as well as manufacturing companies. We encouraged them to come here through incentives, and the United Nations ruled that our incentives were anti-competitive. They went against the competition, and we had to get rid of them. Just so you know, we still have those incentives. We never got rid of them. We don't obey international law because we're the United States. We frankly don't really care. What are they going to do? The UN has no actual power. All it has are laws that we try to follow, but when no one does follow them, we just don't care. So there's that. And I'll put this into another bit of perspective. Hamas has been violating international law since the beginning of time. Ever since they came into existence, they have been violating international law. It is illegal to put all of your military operations inside civilian buildings. Now, bases can be in cities. You can have military bases in major cities. That's totally fine, because then your bases are still easy to target without hurting civilians. That's not what Hamas does. It's not that their bases are in cities. No, their bases are the cities. Their bases are hospitals. Their bases are schools. Their bases are tunnels underneath residential areas. It makes it literally impossible to attack them without killing civilians at the same time. That is internationally illegal, and the UN has done nothing about it. Instead, they've condemned Israel. They've called for an immediate ceasefire without the release of hostages. The UN is basically a tool of Hamas at this point. So I really don't care what the UN says. I'm just making the point that what Iran did was illegal on the international stage. So Iran did not have a right to retaliate against Israel. But Israel does have a right to retaliate against Iran. Because Israel, remember what I just said earlier, according to international law, you can retaliate if your own property or territory is attacked. You can retaliate in kind. In kind. So Israel can retaliate in kind by either killing the Ayatollah and president of Iran or by bombing Iranian military bases and nuclear facilities. That is retaliating in kind, as long as they do not target civilian centers. Now, Iran is a little bit better than Hamas and Hezbollah. Iranian military bases are actually real bases, so you can target them without hurting civilians. So I'm grateful for that. So when Israel does retaliate, there will be minimal civilian deaths, thankfully. But it will not be pretty. And they're expected to retaliate sometime around today. By the time this podcast is out, they could have already done it. I'm recording this podcast like a few hours ahead of time. So by the time you see this or hear it, it could have already happened. I don't know. And I'm praying that Israel is successful and that Iran backs down after this retaliation, but I'm not sure if that'll be the case. So a lot of people are asking me, is this the beginning of World War III? A lot of people ask me if this was the beginning of World War III when the Ukraine war broke out. The Ukraine war was nothing, it wasn't even close compared to what we're experiencing today. It was nothing like World War III. With this Israeli war, I don't think there will be a World War III starting yet. In order to have a world war, you have to have cooperation on both sides. And right now people are saying both sides are Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea, except that that doesn't make sense because yes, Russia does have trade pacts with China, and China does have some trade pacts with Iran and North Korea. They do not actually like each other. So them working together as an alliance on a military stage to defeat the larger NATO AUKUS American alliance, it just doesn't make sense. North Korea has no common goal with Iran. Russia has some common goal, but almost no common goal with Iran. Same with China. So instead, what you'll see are multiple regional wars. A regional war in Europe, a regional war in Middle East, a possible regional war in the Southeast Pacific. You will see a lot of regional wars start to pop up, but it won't be an entire coordinated world war. So is there, this comes to the next question, is there a possibility that American troops get sent on the ground to defend or protect our interests around the globe? It is very possible. We won't be sending troops to Iran. We won't be sending troops to Ukraine. I can guarantee you those two things because, first of all, our president is Joe Biden. He is not going to send troops anymore. Second of all, because it just doesn't make sense. We have reinforcements in the Middle East, but we're not going to be deploying more on top of that. There will not be a draft. There will not be an official war against Iran. We're going to let Israel fight Iran on their own, and which they certainly can. Israel has way superior technology. Just to show you how superior Israel's technology is, almost half of the missiles that Iran fired into Israel failed. Like, they took off, they shot them, they went to the sky, and then they just failed. Fell apart. Fell back to the earth. That's how weak Iran's technology is. Now, in comparison, Israel has a laser weapon called Iron Beam. And it's a close-range laser weapon. It's meant to destroy missiles like Hezbollah's short-range rockets or Hamas rockets. It's not really meant to destroy things like a ballistic missile, but it could if you aimed it correctly. So there is that. They also have this thing called Iron Dome, which I'm sure all of you guys know about. It's partly funded by the American government. It's a lot of its weapons come from the United States, but it's incredibly advanced. It almost never misses its target. It wasn't overwhelmed on Saturday. It's basically almost invincible. The only way to defeat it is by overwhelming it, and they failed to overwhelm it Saturday. I believe they'll continue to fail to overwhelm it as time continues. So there is that. Israel would defeat Iran. Iran claims that they can detect stealth technology. That's technically not true. The way stealth technology works is that you cannot really see it until you're about 15 to 20 miles away from a radar. Then the radar can detect you, but it cannot track you. And once you get within 5 to 10 miles, it can track you. But if a stealth fighter, like an F-35, is 5 to 10 miles away from a radar, then you have more problems than just that the radar can track you. F-35s are meant to go within 50 miles of its target, launch an air-to-ground missile, turn around, and fly away. That's what an F-35 is meant to do. So if for some odd reason there's a stealth fighter 5 to 10 miles away from an air-to-surface or surface-to-air missile, then, I mean, Israel kind of failed already on the strategic part with their fighter jets. So you have more problems to worry about than radar detecting you. So that won't happen. I could see if China blockades Taiwan and North Korea starts shooting things into South Korea, I could see Americans declaring war on China and North Korea. I don't think we'll be declaring war on Iran or Russia or anything like that. And just to be completely fair, no matter who you vote for, if there's a blockade of Taiwan, we will be declaring war on China. Whether you vote for Biden or Trump, whether Trump's elected or Biden's elected, it does not matter. There will be a war with China if they blockade Taiwan. Same story with North Korea. Now, on the other hand, Japan and the Philippines, if we have Trump in office, would probably join our side against both China and North Korea. And Indonesia would stay, neutral. Indonesia would stay neutral. Now, if we had Joe Biden in office, it's possible that Indonesia would actually join China and North Korea. Because right now, Indonesia is very aligned with China and North Korea. They used to be aligned with the United States, but they're actually becoming more and more aligned with China. So it's kind of disappointing to see. So this has been happening over the weekend. Keep praying for Israel if you have been, which I'm sure you have been. Please keep praying for them. It's nothing good, man. It really isn't. I never really like wars. I know I'm extremely imperialist. I believe the United States should have Cuba as a state. I think Puerto Rico should be a state. I think Guam should be a closer territory to the United States. Not a state, but a better territory. More integrated, if you get what I'm saying. I believe the Philippines, we never should have given freedom. They should be a state, but I don't believe we should conquer them. That would be kind of useless. I don't want to send troops to Asia to conquer. That sounds way too overdoing it. So I am very imperialist, but that doesn't mean I like wars. I like freeing nations. I like the idea of freeing the Iranian people from the Iranian regime. The Ayatollah has a strong grip over its own people. So strong, in fact, the Muslims there are rebelling against him. And I know it's a small number, and that small number is also very pro-Israel, despite being Muslim. But that small number does make a difference. And we do need to free those Iranian people from that Iranian regime. I do not want the United States to, like, annex Iran, but I do think we have an interest in freeing the Iranian people. Just like I think we have an interest in freeing the Ukrainian people. But I think that will have to happen over different wars than what's going on right now. And I've talked about in other episodes. So if you want to figure out my opinion there, you can go back and listen to it. But I never really like wars. A lot of times they're useless. A lot of times they accomplish nothing. For example, the War of 1812. If you know how it started, you know that it ended without solving the problem. During the War of 1812, we fought against Britain because we thought that Britain was taking our sailors and using them as merchant warriors. They basically enlisted them to the British Navy to fight against France. And we thought that Britain was doing that, and they were doing it, and that's wrong. So we went to war against Britain. We tried and failed at invading Canada. Britain came and burned down Washington, D.C., and the war ended. No one won, no one lost. In fact, the British stealing our sailors was never solved. We never signed a treaty saying Britain can never do that. Now, they don't do it anymore, obviously. But my point is, wars are oftentimes useless. They accomplish nothing. The only time I'm okay with a war is in defensive wars. So, for example, World War I, World War II, those were necessary. The Korean War, that was necessary. We defeated communism, we brought it back to the North. I think we should have gone further and liberated all of Korea and unified the peninsula, but that didn't happen. The Vietnam War, this is a controversial opinion. I actually think we should have stayed in the Vietnam War. We were extremely close to winning. We probably would have won. The only reason why we lost is because the Vietnamese beat us on the PR. The same thing Hezbollah and Hamas are doing. We were wiping the floor with the Vietnamese, just like Israel is wiping the floor with Hamas and Hezbollah. There is no military competition between us. At all. The only reason why we lost in Vietnam is not because they killed more of our soldiers or because we couldn't advance. We literally had almost all of Vietnam under our control. Almost all of it. Just like Israel has almost all of the Gaza Strip under its control. The only reason why Israel retreated and the only reason why we retreated from Vietnam is because the Vietnamese, the North Communist Vietnamese, decided that it would be a good idea to influence our newspapers and our universities to teach the ideas of socialism, communism, and to teach the ideas of so-called peace. So those ideas infiltrated the American public, and it caused riots, and it caused protests, and people protesting against the war. They had these false ideas that we were killing children indiscriminately. These are the similarities between the Israeli war and the American Vietnam War. We were fighting for a good purpose. We were bringing capitalism and freedom to the Vietnamese people. And the Vietnamese people were on our side. The only problem is the bad people, the Northern Vietnamese, decided to influence us and decided to bring PR to the American people. And they won the war because they made us look like the bad guys. So if you make the good guys look like the bad guys, you can win any war, no matter how powerful your military is. The American military had maybe 50 aircraft carriers, thousands upon thousands of fighter jets that we could use at will in Vietnam. But we lost. Same thing is going on right now in Israel. Israel has a far superior military to Hezbollah and Hamas. They can just wipe the floor with them if they want to. But they're not. Because Hamas and Hezbollah have infiltrated American media on both Twitter and newspaper-wise that every single time Israel strikes a Hamas stronghold, instead of you seeing in the news something saying Israel strikes Hamas stronghold, killing 50 Hamas operatives, instead you see Israel strikes Hamas stronghold, killing 4,000 civilians according to Hamas officials. I'm not joking, that is exactly what you see in the media. So this war between Hezbollah, Iran, Hamas, and Israel, it's not about military strength. Yes, Iran has entered the war now. to try to bring balance to military strength, but let's be completely honest. Israel can wipe the floor with all three of them at the same time. It is not a problem. This is simply to drive more PR, more negative PR towards Israel. And that is exactly what has happened. Our president, our vice president, every single person in office right now are realizing that they're doing bad in poll numbers. And they, for some odd reason, think that if they join the strong left, they join the our caucus with the extremely far left, extremists on the left side, that they will win votes in a town called Dearborn, Michigan, which has very, very few people. So I'm not joking with you when I say this. Our leaders are abandoning the American ideology and are abandoning us voters, independents, Republicans, conservatives, every single person, even moderate liberals. They're abandoning them because they want more votes with the Hamas supporters in Michigan. That is why they're abandoning us. They're not doing it because it's right. They're not doing it because what they think Israel is doing is bad. They're doing it because they want votes. This is politics in modern day. This is the exact same reason why Trump is now pro-abortion. Trump is pro-abortion not because he actually likes abortion, which maybe he does, I don't know. Trump is pro-abortion now because he thinks it will get him more votes. The same reason why Biden is pro-Hamas now. Biden told Israel not to retaliate against Iran, not to fight against Hezbollah, and to slow down his attacks on Hamas because he wants more votes in Dearborn, Michigan. Michigan, by the way, is not very liberal. It's extremely economically conscious. In order to win votes in Michigan, you need to up the manufacturing in Michigan. You need to increase the number of car companies in Michigan. That is what you need to gain votes in Michigan. He's losing Michigan by about 3%. 3%. Him getting votes in Dearborn, Michigan will not help him overcome that number. In fact, I would not be surprised if he called for a ceasefire today without the release of hostages, which he basically has, if those numbers go worse for him. If he goes from 3% to 5% underwater, just because of the number of voters he's alienating in an attempt to gain more. This is not a mathematical problem. This is common sense. Common sense. You're trying to get more voters, but you're alienating the majority of your voters in the same process. It is not that hard to see. For example, let's look at the latest poll numbers. Why do you think Nevada is actually polling for Trump right now? Why do you think that? Why do you think Nevada elected a Republican governor in 2022? Why do you think Nevada has been going Republican more and more over the years? And it's not just because of Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden's been a major factor for why Nevada's becoming Republican. But no, it's not just because of that. It's because the liberal leftists, the people on the far left, are gaining more and more power among the Democratic caucuses. If you're a Democrat today, you're a very far left person. And that's not true with all Democrats. I know Democrats who are normal, moderates, and I can have normal conversations with them all the time. I can't have normal conversations with far left liberals. And I know I said before that you can have normal conversations with people even while you disagree on politics. And that's normally true. The reason why I can't have conversations with far left leftists is not because I don't want to. I do. It's because whenever I talk about something, they have to find a reason to disagree with it. They have to find a reason to try to prove me wrong using reason and rationalism, which, by the way, reason and rationalism do not prove things right or wrong. It's overused in today's world, which, okay. The reason why they're becoming more and more further left is just because they think that if they are louder and louder, they will gain more power. Now, on the other hand, if you're a Republican, you are becoming more and more conservative, but at a slower rate than the left is becoming more extreme. The left has become extreme in about 8 years. It went from moderate Obama to extreme Obama. 2008 to 2012. 2012 was the beginning of extreme Obama. In 2016, the left had completed its course and it had become the extreme left. Now, the right-hand side of this equation is from 2016 to 2024. We went about halfway as far as the extreme leftists have. And I'm not saying I agree with everything the extreme right has to say. I don't. I really don't. I disagree with their anti-immigration policies. I do think we need a wall. I think we need to control the amount of illegal immigrants, but I also think we need to increase the number of legal immigrants, not just from Mexico, but from Europe, from Asia, from all over the world. this world of politics has become crazy. And it's shown in the Israel-Hamas-Iran war. Whoever has the upper hand in the PR can win the war, no matter how powerful their military is. Because we have these leaders like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris who think that if they look bad in tiny little parts of the country, then they have to immediately appeal those parts of the country. And instead, they lose votes in that process. Joe Biden won the election in 2020 by 40,000 votes. People will tell you that it was 5 million because that's how much he won the popular vote by, but the popular vote does not choose the American election. The Electoral College chooses the American election. Joe Biden lost or won the Electoral College by about 40,000 votes. Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. That's all Trump needed to win in order to win the election. And he lost those, Trump lost those three states by 40,000. 40,000. So now what do you think happens if Arizona goes for Trump, Georgia goes for Trump, and Wisconsin goes for Trump? We don't even need Nevada. What do you think happens? Trump wins in 2024. And it's looking like right now, it's going to be way worse than that. For Joe Biden, this is his nightmare. It doesn't matter how much he appeals to the left. It doesn't matter what environmental policies he does. It doesn't matter how many wind turbines or how many solar panels he puts up. It doesn't matter what he does. He cannot win the 2024 election. And I guarantee it, unless one thing happens. If Joe Biden starts becoming more moderate again and Trump gets convicted and goes to prison. Those two factors, or actually technically one factor, will make Joe Biden win the election. But those are becoming less and less likely by the day. By the day. Joe Biden is pandering more and more to the left, not to the middle. Donald Trump has won multiple appeals and multiple court cases already. Starting this week is the hush money case. We'll see how this goes. And if he does get convicted, I guarantee you he will appeal. And I can almost guarantee that appeal will go in Trump's favor. He has a Supreme Court case coming up. I guarantee there will be some sort of change from the original ruling. It's whether or not he has presidential immunity, and I think they'll rule that he does on certain cases, but not on all cases. Well, we'll see. We'll see how this ruling goes. It'll be interesting to watch for sure. Trump is very likely to win 2024. He is not only winning in the polls in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin, but he's winning in the polls in Michigan and Nevada as well. He's currently losing in Pennsylvania, but that's only because of an outlier poll that shows Biden up 10, which is incredibly unlikely. It doesn't really matter how far left you are. Any candidate, either Republican or Democrat, being up by 10 is just incredibly unlikely in a swing state. So that poll's an outlier. It's inaccurate. I don't consider it. And if you don't consider that poll, then Trump's actually up by about 2 points. In Pennsylvania. But because that Biden up 10 is up there, Biden's up by like 0.2. So it's basically a tie. But either way, Trump will probably win Pennsylvania too. That's 312 electoral votes for Trump. For the record, in 2020, Biden won 306. That's a decrease or an increase from Biden by 6 from Biden to Trump. And the whole reason why we're getting this increase is not just because people are realizing that Biden's terrible and because they're realizing they shouldn't have voted for him. We're getting this increase because people are moving from blue states that are controlled by people similar to Joe Biden, not Joe Biden, but similar to him, people who are part of the far left party. And they're moving from those states to red states. The biggest state that grew in terms of raw numbers was Texas. The state that grew in terms of the largest percentage was Florida. Two extremely red states. And you might be saying, well, Texas is going to be the swing state of the future. Maybe it could be, except that Republicans have been making an enormous amount of progress among Hispanic voters inside of Texas, specifically the Rio Grande area. And along that area, it's not extremely populous, but it is somewhat populated. So because Republicans are gaining support among Hispanic voters in those areas, which they're majority Hispanic, because we're gaining that support, the turning blue of Texas has actually stopped, and I wouldn't be surprised if it reverses course now. So thankfully, Republicans have noticed that Texas was turning blue. We have taken action against it. I am grateful for that part of my party. I'm grateful to Ronna McDaniel for at least realizing that. I don't like her. But again, credit where credit is due. You have to give credit to people when they do something good. It's just the way the world is, and it's part of being fair. People are moving to those states, and when they move, sure, when they first move, they vote how they originally voted, but they become more and more conservative. And we've seen that with Florida. Florida is the number one, in terms of percentage, growing state. More people are moving to Florida, in terms of percentage, than to Texas. People from New York, California, Washington, and Oregon are flooding in to places like Texas and Florida because they have governors there who aren't just Republican, but they're competent. These governors don't just sit around and be like, yeah, I'm Republican. I secure the border. Yeah, they're not just saying that type of stuff. They're doing that type of stuff. Greg Abbott has started building a wall around Texas. He's ordered his National Guard to patrol the border in Texas. He's fought with the Biden administration in the courts. And won multiple times. Same with Florida, doing the same thing. These states are leading the way. People are moving to those states because they realize that people like Biden, who pander to people in Dearborn, Michigan for just a couple little votes, are not the people they want running their state or their country. That's why they moved to red states. And that is exactly why, from the year 2000, from 2020, we had a census, right? The census did not actually take effect until 2021. So in the election of 2020, Republicans had -2 electoral votes. And I don't know how to explain this. If you look at an electoral map and you look at the distribution of electoral votes and you take all of the states that are normally Republican, including Florida, we're including Florida now because it is normally Republican now, and you add all of those electoral votes up, and then you add all the liberal electoral votes up. Technically, Republicans are somewhat of an advantage because of all the middle states that have 3 or 4 electoral votes. Now, if you take 2024's numbers, you take that electoral map, and you add all the Republicans up, and then all the Democrats up, the Democrats lost 2 electoral votes, and the Republicans gained 2. What does that tell you? I mean, you could immediately just start yelling at me and say, oh, the Electoral College needs to be eliminated. We need a direct democracy where the popular vote decides everything in America, yada, yada, yada. Except that would be really dumb, because then why in the world do we have a House of Representatives and why on earth do we have a Senate if we're just going to allow the popular vote to decide everything? The most democratic nation in the world is Norway. The only reason why it's the most democratic nation in the world is because it is the size of an American state. It's about 5 million people. 5 million people is... let's see here. Louisiana, about the size of Louisiana. It's smaller than Colorado, I believe. I believe Colorado is 6 million, but maybe you could say Colorado. I mean, Norway is tiny. It has that ability to become a direct democracy just because it's basically a state. That's the size of it. Now, we have 331 and growing million people in the United States. A direct democracy doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work is because people in the Northeast think way differently than people in the Southeast. Even if you just take common ideologies, conservatives in the Northeast are way more liberal than conservatives in the Southeast. Liberals on the West Coast are way more liberal than liberals on the East Coast. Even if you look at it on a basic ideological level, people are way different than each other, depending on where you are in the United States. That's exactly why we cannot have a direct democracy. A direct democracy will just take, well, which of these ideologies is more vocal? And then that ideology, even if it's just the Northeast, which it probably would be the most vocal part, the Northeast would rule the entire country. That is exactly why we do not have a direct democracy. That is why we have a Senate and a House of Representatives. So at the House of Representatives, and you see this in the House with Republicans, by the way, the House Republicans are very, very, they do a lot of infighting. And the whole reason why we do that infighting is because they're different. Republicans follow the ideology of conservatism, largely. That brings a lot of differences about, because Southern Republicans from Texas are way different than the Republicans from Iowa, or the Republicans from Maine, or the Republicans from New York. You get what I'm saying? That's why we have the House. That's why we have the Senate. This is the entire reason why we have all this stuff. Why we have the Electoral College. It gives a voice to every single ideology in every different corner of the country. Without that, there would be no voice. Without this sort of Electoral College system in place, not a single candidate would come to Iowa or Nebraska or South Dakota or North Dakota or Minnesota or Missouri even. All of them would go to the Northeast and California because that's all they'd really have to win, Northeast and California. But because we have the electoral system, each candidate has to go to each general area of the country at least once in order to campaign. That allows them and allows us to hear each candidate's opinion and allows them to start pandering more to the entire country, not just one little part of the country, the entire country. So getting rid of the Electoral College makes no sense. Getting rid of the Senate, obviously, and the House, obviously, make no sense. So why would we get rid of the Electoral College? Now, just before I end the episode, I just want to give you guys a really quick update on the election. So give me half a second here. I'm going to look up 538 polls. It's looking better. I mean, it's kind of tied still. I'll give you that. Okay, so the latest polls right now, the most recent one ended on April 11, so about 4 days ago. It shows Trump up one, and that poll was taken with considering RFK, Stein, and West. And in that poll, RFK only gets 2%, so that might be an outlier poll. I'm not sure. There's another poll that takes into account RFK and stuff, and that one also shows him only getting 2%. So I'm really confused why he's only getting 2%, because when you look at national polls, he's getting things like 10%. So I'm curious why in these polls specifically, he's only getting 2%. He might actually just be at that number and he's just gone down in support a lot, but I'm not sure. We'll have to see. In Arizona, Trump looks like he's up 5 or 4. In Florida, Trump is going to win by a landslide. When you include third-party candidates, Trump is leading by 15. If you don't include third-party candidates, Trump is winning by 13. According to ActiveVote, Trump is winning by 3 and 6. So Trump is up by a lot in both the national polls and the state polls. It's not even really going to be close this November. This is the highest Trump has ever been. And if you remember one thing, every single election, Trump has gained support. In 2016, the polls underestimated him. In 2020, the polls underestimated him. Now, in 2020, it didn't really matter how much the polls underestimated him just because he was so far behind. He was underwater by 7 points. And then on election day, he lost by 40,000 votes. So if we assume that Trump were to gain 7% of support randomly for some odd reason, which is unlikely, I think Trump will gain maybe 3% because Biden's an incumbent, then you get a lot more support coming from. So let's take the 1% polls and you add 3 to that. He's now at 4%, which is more likely. And what doesn't help Biden's campaign is RFK. RFK's, what's her name or his name? I'm not sure. I don't know his campaign people's names, but they're basically saying their number one target, their common enemy, is to defeat Joe Biden. So RFK is more willing to have a President Trump. RFK would rather lose to Trump than lose to Biden. He is saying that. His campaign is saying that. People who vote for RFK are saying that. Independents today are more likely to vote for Trump than they are to vote for Biden. And that used to be, that used to not actually matter. So in 2012, Barack Obama won the election, even though independents voted for the Republican more than for Obama. And the reason why Obama still won is because there were more registered Democrats than there are registered Republicans. But according to a recent Gallup poll, the number of registered Dems and registered Republicans are now even. Our numbers are officially the same. It's about 27% of active voters for both of us. So 54% of voters are registered for one of the two major parties, The number of registered independents is also going down. So what you're actually seeing is third parties coming on the rise. And I mean, that makes sense, especially when you consider how the left is becoming more and more liberal and the right is becoming more and more conservative. You will see more parties coming to the rise, third parties anyway. And so we probably will see within the next 10 years, a lot of different parties in the House of Representatives and the Senate. And I welcome that. I kind of think it's cool if we have that. It brings more balance to the table. Even though I'm a Republican and I probably won't be switching parties, it is cool to see more parties gaining support. I do like that. Just like I also enjoy it when there's third parties, I just like it when there's more than two options. Mainly because I like it when people vote and not stay home. But yeah, that's the state of the election today. Thank you guys for tuning in. And again, pray for Israel. It's really not good there. It's going to be a bigger regional war. Israel will retaliate. Iran will declare war on Israel, probably. We'll probably no longer defend Israel after that, knowing our president. So please pray for Israel. Pray for a successful retaliation. Pray for Iran to back down. Pray for the end of Hamas and Hezbollah. And pray for the safety of all civilians. Because any civilian death is wrong. I know Israel has killed civilians in Gaza. They have killed civilians in Lebanon, which is where Hezbollah is. And that's terrible. I'm still on Israel's side because they're not purposely trying to. They get in the crossfire because Hezbollah and Hamas literally base themselves with the civilians. And I don't mean their bases are in cities. I mean they're literally with walking about the civilians. And so yes, civilians do die. And it's terrible. I don't want that to happen, but it is war. So pray for Israel, pray for the Middle East conflict, but yeah, see you all later. God bless you. Adios.